Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to the movie section of the Geek Cave. I'm Chad.
I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And we are brought to you by BuzzTime, great minds drink alike, Shirtosaurus digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today, and GameStop, power to the players.
Yeah!
There is movie stuff, a bunch to talk about, and we're going to try and keep it peppy and going. So, we're going to start with, what should we start with on this giant list? You know, I think I'm going to start, really, before we talk about movies with Justin, to talk about movies about people who talk about movies.
Okay.
So, Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return.
Yes.
Has made it to Netflix.
Yeah.
And
it's glorious.
The last two nights, Darren and I have watched the first two episodes, and I've only got two words to say about what we've seen so far. Lovingly recreated.
Yeah.
To say more, some of the voice changes are odd. You know, the difference in Tom Servo's voice, the difference in Gypsy's voice, although they address that. They're a little odd, and if you go from watching like the 20 or so episodes that they had of the old series on Netflix and then immediately jump into The Return, it's a little jarring, but not bad.
Well, here's to piggyback on that, if you go back and watch like one of the early seasons, an episode from the early seasons, mm-hmm. Servo's voice is so weird. It's like really low and deep, and it's like the guy doing the voice didn't care. He was there's no like characteristic to the voice whatsoever. And from going from the Joel era to the Mike era, both voices for Servo and Crow changed again. So it's not uncommon for that to happen.
No, it's not. But there's still that. If you watch from one to the next and you're not ready for it, it is. We watched Reptilicus, you know, first, because that was the first episode. And the movie itself is about bad enough to be good.
Yeah, it's almost there.
And it has two jokes in it that are just absolutely out of nowhere hysterical. And then a whole bunch that's reasonable. I refer, of course, to which you'll know when you get to it. And the other one is, and now you're Mr. Filing Cabinet.
That one? I almost died. I almost died.
Darren practically fell out of his seat.
Yeah.
It was glorious. And the jokes mean nothing without the context, so I'm not spoiling anything for you.
Yeah.
So, the next night, what was the next one? Cry Wilderness?
Yes.
Cry Wilderness has easily become the most nonsensical movie I have seen yet. It is not bad enough to be good.
I don't even remember anything about it.
I remember the kid. I remember
it was bad.
I remember a bad Bigfoot costume.
Yeah.
And
with a visible zipper on the back.
And there were some good jokes, but I don't think it was as good as Reptilicus in terms of the commentary.
Right, I'd agree
with
that.
But the opening was great.
Yes.
The opening, the 5-minute opening was well worth the time. So, Mystery Science Theater 3000, lovingly recreated, Patton Oswalt and
Felicia Day
as the villains, as the Mads, they're about perfect for it. I think it really fits. So, movies about movies.
Yeah.
You know, talking about movies in movies. And speaking of movies that we can talk about, I hear that one of us got to see a movie recently, you know, despite having a four-year-old.
Yeah, it's weird.
And it wasn't me. What'd you go see, Justin? Bratz, the movie, yeah. The Return.
God. Three. No, over Easter weekend, I put my wife and child on a train and sent them away, which is tradition.
You know, it's just, it's like the start to, like, Narnia, like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I put them on a train and I sent them away.
I'm glad you're here. I went a lot darker.
All right.
Yeah, don't go that dark, buddy. Don't go down that road. So,
let's carry on.
It was just me. I was alone by myself for the weekend, and I thought, what the hell? So I went to the 11:45 p.m. showing of Power Rangers. Because if I'm going to go see Rangers, it's going to be at a time where there aren't going to be kids around. I was one of three people in the theater. I thought I was going to be the only one, and then at the last minute, two douchebags walked in. But at least I got there early enough where I could sit in the back.
Fair enough.
They looked a little confused to see me. I will admit that. They walked in like, oh, there's a person there. I guess we should behave. Like, damn right. Well, you know, they could have still made out and I wouldn't have cared because I was there to see the movie, not them. Power Rangers is good. Okay? I'm going to say that. It's good. I'm struggling to give it a grade, a letter grade, because there are issues with it that I think they could have done differently or better. But overall, it's good. It is by no means the Power Rangers we grew up on, because this had a budget. I wasn't a huge fan of the suit designs or the new design for Alpha 5. That was a bit jarring with the weird eyeball things. And I wasn't a big fan of the Zord designs either, or the Megazord. They were a bit bland. The Megazord itself was kind of bland. And really only the T-Rex and the Pterodactyl showed any semblance of the creature itself. I couldn't even tell you that the Mastodon was a Mastodon Zord. At all.
Three Terrorblast arrows. And we could take out them robot dinosaurs.
We could take them out, yeah. It'd be easy.
Probably, yeah. But what they got wrong in terms of graphic design, they got oh so right with character design. In the original series, all five teenagers with attitudes knew each other. They were friends. Zordon somehow magically picked them to be the new Power Rangers. In this movie, okay, spoiler. If you've not seen it yet, you should. Spoiler. In this movie, they're not friends. They don't know each other. In fact, only a couple of them have a passing knowledge that the other exists. And they're not perfect. The movie starts with Jason, the leader, the Red Ranger, running away from the cops after a failed prank. He's like the star quarterback. After a failed prank on the other team's campus, he wrecks his vehicle, screws up his knee, and is on house arrest. He can go to school, and he can go home. And he has to be home by 7 p.m. or he goes to jail. He ends up, in order to pass the year to graduate, or, you know, make it through the year, he has to go to detention every Saturday, where we meet Billy. Billy is in detention because he has a love of pyrotechnics and blew up his lunchbox. I should also point out that in this universe, Billy is autistic. And they address that in the film. It's not something that you're just supposed to assume. He even says, all right, he's on the spectrum. We meet Kimberly, who's also in detention because she was one of the cheerleaders. She was part of some cyberbullying. One of her friends sent her a very risque picture of themselves, and she passed it on to someone who then circulated it around the school. So, you know, she's not perfect. Later in the movie, we meet Zach, who ditches school all the time and is struggling with the fact that his mother is very ill and is going to die. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So he's struggling with that. And then we come across Trini, who is one of the new girls at school. And she's struggling with the fact that her family is, quote, perfect. They try to be the perfect family, and she just doesn't fit in with them. Not only in her personality, but in her... You know, she's... They never say she's a lesbian, but... I mean, she's either a lesbian or she's bisexual. Either way, it doesn't fit the mold that her family is trying to create. And they don't know how to deal with that. In the trailer, the mother slams down a cup and says, pee in this cup, after she says, well, I think some of my friends and I met an alien and now we're superheroes. That happens in the movie, and it happens rather quickly, as if the mother just has that, you know, specimen cup handy in the dining room.
Yeah, you never know. I mean...
You never know. So these aren't... compared to the original series, these kids aren't perfect. They're not pillars of the community. They aren't friends. They are not only ethnically and gender diverse, they are diverse across the board. These kids are more relatable than the original Power Ranger characters. And I've been watching a lot of the old series because my son has found it. And I mean, I've watched a lot of it. And it's not that bad. If you look at it strictly from the perspective of a kid's show, it's not that bad. I've seen a lot worse. But the new Power Rangers movie is by no means that. They spend most of their movie struggling to deal with their powers and figure out how to use them. They don't actually morph into the Power Rangers until the last 30 minutes of the movie. It's build up, training themselves, getting ready. And as they're doing that, you're watching Rita build herself up to activate her master plan. They finally morph, they get their act together, they get the Zords, and eventually they form the Megazord and defeat Rita. I'm not going to give away, I'm not going to go through the whole movie, but it is worth seeing. There, like I said, there were a few editing things I would have done differently. The first time you see the Zords in action, they kind of mimic the original scene with all five Zords running in unison down a field, down a canyon or whatever. As soon as you see that, they cut right to the Power Rangers theme. You know, go go Power Rangers.
Yes.
There was no buildup. It's like suddenly they hit play on the song. They paused it just before the lyrics started, and then that's when they hit play when that scene started. It was very jarring. I almost would have preferred if it had had a buildup, or if they had just done an instrumental version of it, just so you got the gist of the theme. Because that had nothing to do with the music you'd heard previously throughout the movie. It was just thrown in for the sake of, oh my god, it's the theme song. I really wish they would have saved it for the ending credits. That would have been better. But overall, it was good. It was really good. And what's it rated? PG-13?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there may be some people who say, well, it's not the original Power Rangers. That is correct, because that one was designed for kids, little kids. The world of Angel Grove in the TV series is very happy-go-lucky. You know, yeah, there's giant monsters, but they're not overly creepy or scary.
A juice bar is a major hangout, for God's sake.
Exactly. The juice bar is. In this world, it's more realistic, if you will.
Yeah.
Yes, there's aliens and giant monsters and superheroes, but the world itself, if you take that out, it's still a relatable world. So, yes, it's different from the TV series, but in a lot of good ways. So, if you have a chance to see it and you're a fan of Power Rangers, go see it.
All right.
All right. So, X-Files is coming back for another run, a 10-episode run, with David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson as Mulder and Scully. Chris Carter's coming back as showrunner and executive producer. Now, this is not the first time this has happened since the movies, 15 years ago or however long those were. They were actually back for a 6-episode run last year to mixed reactions. So I don't know exactly how they got another run. But for those who, you know, really want to believe, they're coming back for 10 more.
I kind of want to believe.
So, Cloak and Dagger.
I stopped believing for a while and Journey was pissed.
Yeah, I'm sure they were. Cloak and Dagger, apparently some kind of superhero team, has a movie trailer. We have it on The Cave. It seems to fit in with a lot of the teen dramas today. And in my opinion, that's not necessarily a good thing. Hmm. So, watch it, form your opinion. I'm going to wait until Justin explains to me exactly who Cloak and Dagger are.
It's a Marvel thing.
I'm sure they are, and I'm sure that there's information out there. I'm just, the trailer didn't make me care enough to want to find out. So I'll add it to my
list of possible long boxes.
I'll have my research librarian do it and just feed me a report. So in 1992,
Thank you for that.
You're very welcome. A show aired on the BBC called Ghost Watch. Now, Ghost Watch was a scripted show in the guise of a news report. And kind of like War of the Worlds before it, it did not go terribly well with the viewers. It was a haunted house story, you know? And it basically an early version of the mockumentary, you know, in terms of the found footage kind of thing. And people didn't know how to take it. And so there were reports of PTSD, you know, linked to this thing. There was medical problems. Parents complained. And the BBC actually banned this thing. It was madness. Just sheer madness. Now, you can watch it in Ooh. All of its 1992 glory on Shudder, Shudder, which is the horror streaming site through AMC. I didn't realize that there were so many really terrible horror movies out there until I looked up Shudder on the AMC website. I could make an entire year's worth of random movies just by picking out the "we think you'd like" section.
All the 80s were, right? Just bad horror movies?
And the 70s, and apparently the 90s. So, it's a thing. If you do want to watch what ultimately, you know, could be called the grandfather of the Blair Witch Project and other, and Cloverfield, other such found footage and, you know, is it real, is it not kind of things, Ghost Watch was one of the early ones that did a good job with it, so... in keeping up with the likely writer's strike, even though no one's officially talking about it, you know, in quotes there, as of April 21st anyway, it sounds like the Writers Guild is going to get their strike authorization, that they got it at their meeting they had on April 18th. And if nothing is settled before the contract expires on May 1, the strike is near certain, you know. To give an idea on what they have to bridge in order to come to some kind of consensus is the difference between the two sides of the table comes to about $350 million. You know, between the Writers Guild, their proposal of 500 and something million, and the studios at like 180 million. And when all that's come, that's a whole lot of distance to have to come together.
Yeah.
In order to make that fit. More info as events warrant. It's just expect that we're probably going to see a butt ton of reality shows, sports, and commentary shows coming next fall. Joss Whedon wants an unknown actress to play Batgirl. I'm not opposed.
I'm fine with it.
No, that's cool.
Okay. HBO has announced a Fahrenheit 451 adaptation. There was one movie adaptation before Fahrenheit 451. It was a French director. It was his first English-speaking or English-language movie. And it wasn't bad. It told the story pretty well, but it was also kind of bland. You know, they just, there wasn't the charisma in it. That shouldn't be a problem this time because HBO has already signed on Michael Shannon and Michael B. Jordan into this. Now, Michael Shannon's worked with the director before, and he's a good actor. Michael B. Jordan is honestly starting to become a bona fide movie star. You know, he's got name recognition in and of himself to keep almost. However, there is no word yet on Michael J. Fox, Michael Fassbender, Michael Caine, Michael Keaton, Michael Myers, or Anthony Michael Hall.
What about the original Michael Jordan?
We don't think the original Michael Jordan is also on this just because they didn't want to have to worry about how they're going to write names on the trailer.
Oh, good point.
Guardians.
Well, you know, Michael Jordan, Michael B. Jordan.
I be Jordan. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is getting a sequel called Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. James Gunn, he wants to return to it. He wants to end the trilogy. Let him.
Yeah.
He seems to be having fun.
I like how the second movie isn't even out yet, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to totally do a third one.
Well,
it's going to make money.
It will probably make money.
Oh, yeah. And
so what I'm looking forward to in Volume 2, oddly enough, are the credit scenes, because we're supposed to get 5 of them. 5 mid and end credit scenes.
Why?
Because the last time he did the joke end credit scene with Howard the Duck, and so what's the only other way that you could make something silly? I mean, it's not like he's going to do something sillier than Howard the Duck. What he can do now is he can make fun of, what was it, one of them had like 2 or 3 end scenes. So just go with, it's like, you know, when...
it's almost like, is he going to give each character their own end scene?
We can only hope.
Star-Lord, Gamora, Groot...
Rocket, Drax.
And Drax, that's 5. So.
Yeah, maybe. I'm more thinking it's a... kind of... I don't know. I don't know. I just...
But the only logical next step for this is on Volume 3... We get like 10 minutes of actual movie, and then the next hour and a half is an end credit scene. Has nothing to do with the Guardians. Has nothing. It's just, by the way, here. Here is the misadventure of random character whom you vaguely
It's the introduction
recall.
Of Squirrel Girl.
Yes!
No, that would probably...
I would be okay with
make
that.
Lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
Yes, it would.
So speaking of previews and trailers and scenes and so forth, the Thor Ragnarok trailer finally excited me about the movie.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I was going to see it anyway because my spouse is really interested in the Thor movies. This was the one. Yes, I know him from work. You know, that's finally got me to say, yeah, all right. I think that they oversold the trailer a little bit by showing the broken Mjolnir. I think that they could have avoided that part.
Could have just cut it off when she catches it.
Mm-hmm. They could have cut it off when she caught it, and that would have been it. Showing it broken, I don't know. It's broken 2 or 3 times in the comics. It's been chipped and sliced by other things. So, I mean, ultimately, when you get down to it, it is just a bit of rock.
It's a hammer.
Although they if with it now broken in the cinematic universe, they have set up the perfect angle to introduce Throg.
Yes, they did. So
maybe that'll be one of the end credit scenes of Guardians 2.
Now, talking about the Marvel movies, what will the Marvel movies be after Infinity Wars is kind of the big question right now. Because Kevin Feige has been evasive in terms of what's coming. Now, that by itself is not too different. Most studios are mum about the future plans. But what's different here is Feige saying things will be very different after 2019, after May 2019. End quote on that. The implication suggests that there will be no Phase 4. You know, and that might be a good thing. I mean, in 2008, when Iron Man came out, things were easy. They were exciting, and missteps are more easily forgiven because the movies, even the missteps, were entertaining.
Right.
You know, Iron Man 2, clearly not as good as Iron Man 1, but it still introduced things, and it still was fun to watch. I would say the same for Thor 2, for The Incredible Hulk, etc. Now, though, with each movie coming out making some kind of reference to one of the others, with the exception of Guardians of the Galaxy, we're reaching this point where the concept of the shared universe that they had is starting to be a burden rather than something exciting. I mean, when you're looking at 22 movies that are all connected in the universe, 5-6 different TV shows...
Which they barely treat as connected,
but the TV shows reference and connect to the movies.
Right.
The movies don't have to connect to the TV shows, but vice versa does. So it might be a good move for them to be able to step back from the shared universe concept a little bit and say, we're going to tell this story and hang all the rest of the stuff that's going on. And since we're going to start running into the time when our actors are not going to want to come back necessarily, or they're just going to age out. Or
yeah, they won't be able to, yeah.
It's probably a good time to really start looking at where can we transition this to a new form. The trilogy is a fine, long-standing tradition in film, and Phase 3 might very well be a really good place to end it if they can end it on a big bombastic note.
Yeah.
Nicole Scherzinger, who I've only recently learned is on The X Factor, which is odd because I've never seen The X Factor. I don't know what it's about.
Oh, it's pronounced Scherzinger.
Is it not?
Oh, no. I've never known. I always pronounce it Scherzinger, whatever.
Scherzinger?
Yeah.
I'm using a German pronunciation, so that's I'm kind of hoping.
It probably made sense.
Anyway, she's in talks to play Elphaba in a film adaptation of Wicked. And we'll care about her later if she actually gets the role. But what I'd like to bring out here is that Universal is back to working on creating a Wicked adaptation. Because going to see live theater is expensive.
Yes.
And movies less so.
Yeah.
And so a good adaptation of...
Not by much, but...
and going to see... Seeing a good adaptation of a Broadway show, it's the holdover. You know, it's the placeholder until you can see it on Broadway again. It worked really well for Sweeney Todd. It worked marvelously for Into the Woods. A little less so for Les Mis, but there are certainly places they can go there. Captain Marvel's found its directors in Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, and whew. Thank goodness they found them just in time for a 2019 release date. I had no idea what they were going to do if they didn't get it done 2 years ahead. Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer is released. It's a thing. We have it on the cave. Go watch it. I'll be somewhere else. I've lost interest. I honestly have. So I look forward to you guys talking about it and being really excited, but I'm just not.
Are you going to go see it when it comes out?
I will probably have to. My spouse will want to go.
She'd join us.
Yep, she could. You know, I don't know why I got to go see it. Nobody wanted to go see Aliens with me. So.
You didn't ask me.
That's true. Also, I'm not going to be anywhere near you. You're not going to be anywhere near me. It's a sad day for all of us.
And I'm as far away as I can get.
It is.
So, if there's no other movie news, then we can do a random review.
All right.
I got nothing.
Then, Kent, if you don't mind.
And now, it's time for Chad Savage's Random Movie Review.
So, To Kill a Mockingbird is considered one of the greatest works of American literature. And after watching the movie, I'd say that the film absolutely deserves its spot on the AFI Top 100. So, for those of you who've not read it, haven't seen it, the film is essentially a slice of life over the course of 3 years during the Depression. For the most part, it follows Scout and Jem, who are the children of Atticus Finch, a lawyer in the town. And when Atticus is appointed to defend Tom Robinson, a black man accused of beating and raping a white woman, the kids learn, effectively, the reality of racism and prejudice as it exists in their town. Which, I realize, sounds like a really positive, wonderful, amazing thing to watch. Because everyone likes watching courtroom dramas and, you know, racism.
Good old Perry Mason meets Maniac McGee.
Yeah. But I will tell you that what sells the story is the innocence of the kids. Almost the entire movie is told from the perspective of the kids. I don't know that you could name more than a half a dozen scenes that they're not there in some way, shape, or form. And they approach the world very honestly and very openly, to the point of being rude, because they don't realize that what they're saying is rude. They don't realize that they're embarrassing somebody who can't pay their lawyer.
They're just being super blunt.
Yeah. You know, it's... Why are you bringing these hickory nuts? Well, because he couldn't afford to pay the lawyer, so the lawyer's letting him do it in trade. You know. Scout is who is really the narrator here. A six-year-old girl. And is ridiculously blunt and outspoken, just like a six-year-old is.
Yeah.
Jem and Dill, who are the brother and the neighbor kid, they're typical kids trying to outdo one another. And watching them, they looked and acted like every kid I've ever known in some way, shape, or form. Which is really good. So seeing what's going through going on in this town, mostly through their eyes, it only serves to highlight kind of the ugliness of adult prejudice, which, again, it doesn't sound like a fun thing to do, and I don't know that I'd call the movie fun, but I would certainly call it good. This is not a feel-good movie. It's not an uplifting drama. This is pure drama that has their elements of comedy, because you got to have your comic relief, usually when the kids are playing together. You know, they're trying to sneak up and catch a glimpse of Boo Radley, you know, the reclusive neighbor boy, you know, that they don't know. It's got the bits of suspense and anxiety-driven kind of theater, like when the kids are walking through the woods at night, you know, and even the funky little ham costume wasn't able to take away that sense of, what the heck is going to happen?
Yeah, there's a big sense of foreboding.
Yeah, because as they're walking and they stop because they hear something, and then they stop again, look around, nothing. You know, it's really, really well done. And having those pieces woven throughout this otherwise pretty deep and complex story, I think that we could have, honestly, the three of us watch it together, we'd probably be able to talk about it for a solid hour.
It's really good.
Just to try to suss out more and more of what it was saying. The movie was filmed in 1962 in black and white, which, as the kids see it, that's the world. There's right and wrong. And so I think that it would lose something if the movie was in color. This sense that things are very, very jarring one way or the other. And I think that's also why, honestly, Atticus Finch wears white most of the time. Wears the lighter colors. The film is simply adorned. You know, it doesn't have a whole lot of different sets. There's probably half a dozen. I think I counted seven.
Yeah.
Different sets. There's not a whole lot of complexity there. And across the board, the actors are great. They're really great. From Gregory Peck, who actually won the Oscar for Best Actor that year and deserved it, to the woman who was beaten and accused, you know, and raped. raped in quotation marks. We get the impression that she wasn't actually. She was certainly beaten, but we don't know the other ways.
Right.
You know, the characters that are on there for less than 10 minutes. Tom Robinson, the man who's accused. Well, just the one courtroom scene.
Yeah.
Just the one courtroom day scene.
It's the only time we see him on camera.
It's the only time we see him, and that it was great.
Yeah.
I believed everything he said. So, this movie has earned its place on the AFI Top 100. I recommend you see it at least once. I mean, like The Graduate, it kind of focuses on this particular time and place in history. But unlike The Graduate, one, it's good. Two, it's telling a more intriguing story with greater character complexity. And three, it actually feels like it's trying to say something rather than just feel something. You know, there might be a time and place for the emotional journey story. This one is much more about, and I would say this one is much more intellectual exercise in terms of what does this mean? How is this working around? How is this going to affect these kids later?
Yeah.
Because you get the sense at the very end of the movie that the story's really not done.
All right.
The story's got a lot more. Now, so yeah, go see it. Absolutely. It's on Netflix, so
well worth your time.
What I find interesting about To Kill a Mockingbird, specifically Harper Lee, the author, this was her first published mm-hmm. work, and then that was it. She didn't do anything else for mm-hmm. decades. She kind of became a recluse. About a couple years either before or after she passed away, they found a manuscript of another book she wrote, mm-hmm. and they released it. Funny story, that book was actually the first thing she turned into her publisher. They said, well, we're not a huge fan of this. So then she went back, wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, and then that was literally all she wrote.
And
there was some controversy over that one.
The Go Tell a Watchman has a whole lot of controversy because it deals with a much older scout. In this one, Scout's 6 years old. In that book, she's 26. And it's her seeing the racism of her father, you know, going to kind of a white nationalist
meeting. Yeah, it makes Atticus Finch an entirely different character.
Mm-hmm. And so there's this, you know, for something that it may have been a first draft, but it's being treated like a sequel because... because Scout is 20 years older.
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of has to. I haven't read it all the way through. You know, I've read just tiny little pieces opening up just to find out in the language. I've got other things to read right now that are difficult. I don't need to read that particular one yet. But it's on the list.
Yeah. And the beauty is you don't need
Go Tell a Watchman to fill in any cracks or holes from To Kill a Mockingbird.
No, I highly recommend either reading or watching To Kill a Mockingbird, but the other one you don't need.
It won the Pulitzer, so... You know, To Kill a Mockingbird won a Pulitzer, so it... Theoretically... It's worth reading. I mean... The Pulitzer, I mean, come on, it was named after a guy who made up all kinds of shit in order to sell newspapers. Clearly, this is the height of journalistic integrity. You know, how winning a Nobel is the height of peace, named after a guy who invented dynamite.
well played.
So anyway, with there being nothing else... Nothing from Darren.
I'm good.
So for Kent, for Justin, for Darren, for BuzzTime, Sure to Source, and GameStop, we bid you adieu. I'm Chad Savage. Remember, everyone is a geek for something.